Would you like me to speak for a long time?
Indeed.
Well, I'm going to read from John chapter 1. Those of you who know anything about the New Testament might be aware that there are four Gospels, four biographies, as it were, of Jesus. Now, two of them are often quoted at this time of year. Luke talks about the shepherds. Matthew talks about the magi, or the wise men. Mark doesn't really mention anything, because he's probably writing in a hurry and only talks about what he really, really has to. And then we come to John. And John doesn't mention stables or magi. He doesn't mention shepherds. He has a very kind of theological reflection of what the nativity is about. Let me read a few verses to you. John chapter 1 and verse 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. This man came for a witness, to bear witness to the light, and all through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. Now, if you've heard that for the first time, you might, I think, feel it's very kind of beautiful and very poetic, but you might also think, I have absolutely no idea what it's on about. Why would we talk about this passage in a carol service as opposed to all the others that we're going to hear from very soon in Matthew and Luke? Well, John gives us an explanation for why the Christmas story actually happened. He begins by saying, in the beginning of what? Well, I'm a Christian. That might not take you by too much of a surprise. This is a church. It is a carol service. I don't believe this world came about from nothing. I don't believe it's always been here. I believe there was a beginning, and that beginning had a cause. But that isn't really John's point. He says, in the beginning was the Word. Now, I'm sure you'll agree that words are incredibly powerful. The pen, we are told, is mightier than the sword. And if you have a sword or a gun or an army, you might conquer a kingdom. You might invade a country. But if you have an idea, if you write something down and you publish that idea, you can change a world many generations after you have been. And yet John says, in the beginning was the Word. Which word? I use words all the time. I use words at work. I use words here. I'm using words now. There might be words going through your head right now. The Greek word for words is logos. In the beginning was the logos. Well, what does that mean? What did the Greeks mean by logos? Well, it can mean the mind. It can mean an expression. It can mean the reason. It can mean the ordering. Or it can simply mean word. There are things going on inside my head right now. There may be things going on inside your head. Oh, there we go, Sanyo. That's not going on through my head. But how do I take what's going on inside my head and communicate that to you? Words. My words communicate what's going on inside here. Otherwise, you cannot decipher my thoughts. Words are not cheap. In fact, they're very, very powerful. Now, the Greek word logos means reason or expression, but in Aramaic, the language that Jesus actually spoke, the word is memra, and it means God's expression, God revealing himself to people. So in the beginning was God's expression of himself. In the beginning was the reason. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So is the Word God, or is he not? Well, John says both. He is with God, and was God. And in verse 2, he says something extraordinary. He was in the beginning with God. So most ancient Greeks could have read John's Gospel Thank you. I don't feel as scared anymore because I can't see you. And if you wanted to sneak out through that door, I would not know because... But the ancient Greeks believed in ideas and concepts and they liked that. But John goes further. He says the reason behind the universe, the being, the expression of God, is not inanimate. It's a person. There is a person behind the universe. He was in the beginning with God. Verse 3, all things were made through him. Without him, nothing was made that was made. In other words, you have a creator. You have someone who made you. You have someone who wanted you to be born. Your parents might not have wanted you to be born, but your creator did. And the creator here, we're told, in him was life, and the life, the light of men. This strange being, this expression of the inexpressible God, we're told that he is the source of life. And that life is light. One of the reasons I like this carol service is that we get to use the candles. Now, when that stops working, of course, that does cause us some problems, and we resort to electricity. But these candles are a reminder of how dark it is. Now, I live in a town. I don't live out in the sticks like some of you. And I'm used to having street lights on all the time. I took a trip to Lancaster Castle in the summer. And if you've ever been there before, one of the highlights of the trip, if you like that kind of thing, maybe that was an ironic statement, is the dungeons. And you can go into the dungeons and they'll make a big thing of shutting the door. And in that dungeon, there is pure darkness. Now, when we say it's dark outside, we forget the fact that there's often a moon, or there are street lights, or there are houses with light coming out of the windows. And when you go into the dungeon at Lancaster, you're actually in real darkness. Now, of course, when you do take people there, they all start getting the phones out and that kind of thing. So the effect is somewhat spoiled. But these candles are a reminder that we live in a dark world. But the light has entered that world. The message of Christmas is not just go away and be generous to people, though I hope you will be. It's not just make time for your family. That's what someone told me the other day. Christmas is all about making time for family. Well, I hope you do make time for family. And if you are making time for family, ask yourself why you need to. Christmas is about reminding us that though we live in a dark world and the world is dark, the light of the world has entered. John says, the light shines in the darkness and the darkness did not comprehend it. A better word would be the darkness has not overcome it. You know, two nights ago we had the longest night of the year. Like plants, we need light. I have a real fear of the month of November. Some of you know this, you've heard it before. You see, in November, it all seems to get very dark very quickly. And my mood reflects the brightness of the sky. And those dark months do leave us perhaps a little depressed and a little despondent, but John here is speaking of spiritual light.
there is a spiritual light and there is spiritual darkness. And just as we have managed to light up this little corner of a field in darkest Lancashire, so Christ is able to light up even a dark heart. So far, so good. Now, I imagine that when the original readers of John's Gospel heard that kind of thing, they were probably nodding in agreement. So if you were a Greek pagan reading this for the first time, you would have liked it. If you were a Jewish person hearing it for the first time, you would have nodded. Very good. The Greeks believed that there was some kind of nameless, formless God called the Demiurge, who had something called the Logos, by which he was expressed. And in Greek philosophy, they talk about the Logos, the expression of God. And then in verse 14, John goes and spoils it all. If ever you go to a dinner party and you're getting on just fine with your host and you feel that you'd like to put the cat among the pigeons, tell them how you voted in the referendum. Suddenly the discussions become far more animated and personal, and you're either the best man around the table or there was something wrong with you for the way you voted. You know, in verse 14, and I've not read it to you yet, in verse 14, John spoils it. All these sophisticated Greek people who are reading this text for the first time are horrified. And those well-educated, pious Jews who read it for the first time are shocked also. Because in verse 14, John says something absolutely shocking. Let me read it to you. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. For ancient Greeks who were well conversant with philosophy, it was inconceivable that something spiritual and pure should inhabit a physical human body. That the purity of God could descend to such a level was beneath their understanding. For the Jews, it was absolutely inconceivable that the one true God could ever be seen. Even Moses barely glimpsed him. But that is exactly what happened in that stable all those years ago. The great God who created the world, who made you, became like you. He became a human being. The invisible God became visible. The supernatural God became natural. The untouchable God became touchable. The ineffable God spoke to us. The God who was hidden from the human race ever since man's rebellion in Eden joins us in this desert of life. Paul says in Acts chapter 17 and verse 27, God did this so that you would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. Does God feel far away? Does he feel distant? Some being up in the clouds who cares not about you? Well, says Paul and says John, that God, whom you could neither see, nor hear, nor touch, became one of us, that we might have a relationship with him once again. Let me read to you some words from one of my favourite writers, C.S. Lewis. He writes, "Lying at your feet is your dog. Imagine for the moment that your dog and every dog is in deep distress. Some of us love dogs very much. If it would help all the dogs in the world to become like men, would you be willing to become a dog? Would you put down your human nature, leave your loved ones, your job, your hobbies, your art, literature, and music, and choose instead the intimate communion with your beloved? The poor substitute of looking into the beloved's face and wagging your tail, unable to smile or speak. Christ, by becoming man, limited the thing which to him was the most precious thing in the world, his unhampered, unhindered communion with the Father. Now, you might have heard that and thought, what an absolutely ridiculous idea that a human being could become a dog. And of course, it is ridiculous. But John says, God the Creator became a man. Wow. That is the Christmas message. John does not have the stables and the magi and the shepherds and the angels. He takes something called the Word, a term with which the Greeks and the Jews of the first century would have been very, very familiar. And he says something absolutely shocking, something incredibly radical and hard to understand. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. I'm going to close now, but I just want to echo those words of Paul from Acts chapter 17. God might seem that he's far away, but the God of the stable of Bethlehem is far closer than you think. And he yearns, he longs to have a relationship with each one of us. He became a human being that we might understand him and see him and have fellowship with him, and that one day he might die. In that first carol we had, the first Noel, he talked about the blood of Christ. And you might have thought, well, you know, that's the Easter story, that's Good Friday, we're not doing that tonight. But of course the two are related. The two cannot be separated. God came in the flesh that he might die upon that cruel wooden cross, that we who die in him might live. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Amen.